You're listening to DraftKings Network.
All right, everybody, Mother's Day is officially around the corner. If mom's gift isn't already on the way, you've got hours, maybe even minutes to get it together. So head over to 1-800-Flowers.com right this second. 1-800-Flowers still has great last-minute deals on handmade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts ordered easily and delivered fresh. You want to get mom something that shows your appreciation for all that she's done? We know you've been a knucklehead. She knows you've been a knucklehead. Please do better. Help your mom feel appreciated this Mother's Day. This is your last chance to lock in these Mother's Day deals. Only good while supplies last. Order today at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan, D-A-N. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
It's Thursday, guys, so you know what that means. We got Adnan, we got Samson. It's a segment everybody loves to relish in. David Samson's got the Nothing Personal Tour. You can get tickets at davidsamsonpodcast.com and also listen to Nothing Personal with David Samson. Adnan Berg has Cinephile, executive produced by one Christopher Cody. All right, guys, I'm not going to do the Dan thing and filibuster a long time. I'm going to jump right into you guys. Both have a top five list. Today's opening day. Top five opening scenes.
Who's more excited for opening day, though, before we get to the list? Do you think Adnan or Samson? They're both baseball guys.
All right. All right, let's talk about baseball. Hey, guys, who's more excited for opening day?
I think we're both jacked up. I mean, listen, I'm going to be on with Mike Lowell, of course, one of David's old, I was going to say teammates, but one of his guys, obviously from the Marlins all those years. So it's me, Mike Lowell, Chris Young for 3 hours talking baseball. And I don't know if David shares my sentiment. I'm sure he does. I wish there was more games at 1 o'clock Eastern. I'll be on from 1 till 4. 2 hours, we're just going to be blathering what you've done all offseason. And at 3:05, thank God, Corbin Burns, first pitch, and we can watch the Baltimore Orioles. But we all know all the intrigue around the Dodgers and Ohtani. They're going to be playing, obviously, in our showcase game. Bob Costas with the call. I can't wait for some actual baseball to be played. David?
It's too bad that there's the rainouts. It's such bad weather here in the Northeast that Philly and New York had to get rained out. It was going to be the first game. So many storylines about this season, and everyone thinks there's a cloud because of Ohtani, and Wander Franco just got put on the administrative list again. He's done until June 1st or sooner if he gets suspended forever for whatever happens to him. But the fact is, once play ball, once you get that first pitch, the storylines finally change, and we get to see 162 chapters unveil themselves one at a time. And at the end, will it be Diamondbacks, Rangers? Who will be the surprise team? You just never know. And that's why today's such a great day.
So many chapters. So many chapters. Adnan, quick question for you. When does the shoot start for your 1920s era gangster movie?
I mean, I always come out of the gate with the Al Capone suit. Opening day, these guys know I'm wearing pinstripes. Listen, I know you have better things to do than watching Movie Network, but at 1 o'clock, we're doing this 1930s style Al Capone thing. I'll send you the link. I'll post it on social. It's Hitchcockian. We pulled all the stops. Opening day, we're going to crush.
I wear my ring on opening day, Adnan. It's sort of like a wedding or a bar mitzvah. I wear it during the World Series. Oh, you can press that button all night long, Lionel Richie. That is one that I love. But opening day, there's just something spectacular about it.
What's your favorite opening day memory, David?
Well, I have so many memories. 18
Ali,
opening days.
Muhammad Ali.
The rain delay in a dome ballpark.
Listen, I'll get one before David because he's got a lot more. Mark Burley. He made the greatest play ever made by a pitcher. That was an opening day. People forget, like, wait, that was the first game of the season. That play was incredible. That flip play.
Mark Burley still has not spoken to me since I traded him to Toronto. Not
because
once.
Of dog?
Not
makes sense.
One time.
But and for the record, what it's because I think he signed a deal in the offseason, right? And then you traded him in June? Do I get that right?
No, you got it wrong. We traded him during the offseason after 2012, and we sent him to Toronto in that big trade. And I called him about it, and I text him every year on his birthday. and crickets. It's just a sea of blue. I'm in touch still with his wife. Look at this play. He was such a great defensive pitcher. The way he fielded his position, second only to Maddux in my career.
It was awesome.
Is it red? Are the read receipts on? Because Pablo Torre revealed the other day that he used to have like a relationship with Ed Hockley. And then at some point, it's just like Ed Hockley has never responded to him again after a certain incident. And so I said, I thought it was just saying delivered. And he showed me his screen and says, nope, it says red, including when he had sent on the day I was talking to Pablo. I was like, I just sent him.
By the way, I mean, nothing worse than a red receipt. I mean, if you're Ed Hockley, you got to figure out how to get it out of your system. Come on, man.
Is that?
I want to know what the number is for blues in a row before it's stalking. What does the room think is the number?
Three.
No way.
Don't answer that question.
It has to be more than three.
I mean, how many? Three, that's it.
I'm not answering that question.
If you were friends with Ed Hockley, three texts, just respond, that's it, we're done.
I'm not answering that question.
You have to know that in this day and age, people get so many text messages. Not everyone's as crazy as I am, where I go to bed without a red number every single night.
Really?
But I do too.
There's some people who are in the hundreds.
Yeah.
Really? You guys have addressed every single text message that's ever come
throughout the day. I mean, at times of the day, I will just check if I've missed a text message. I'm like Samson on this. I cannot go to bed with it. I've seen JP Morosi's phone, 500 unread text messages, 1,000 emails. That's insane to me. Can't do it.
There are people in this room right now who I have unread texts from. I'll find out Sunday. I'll find out.
That's just
never
wrong.
Miss the text from me. That's all I care
it's,
about.
At some point, it's just a deluge. And the only thing I can do is just walk away. I can't.
I want to know who it is in the shipping. I'll tell you right now. Roy is great at texting back. Roy's always responding. Cody
is the worst.
He's your executive producer. There's worse than me. I'm not great. I know I'm not good, but I think Dan's worse.
Levitard's worse.
Dan's the worst because he will respond at 3 in the morning. That's why he's the worst.
He has 3 devices to respond from.
That's what's funny.
I love the email text from Dan.
Yeah. All right, guys.
Go back. Make the point about Levitard. He's got 3 different devices he responds from.
Yeah. Yeah, he absolutely does. His tablet, his phone, his computer.
Yeah, that's not an exaggeration, ladies and gentlemen. All right.
All right, I got a top 5 list that I think the room is going to like.
All right.
It's top 5 opening scenes in honor of opening day.
Nice.
Number 5, who can forget the opening scene of No Country for Old Men? When Javier Bardem, as the greatest villain of all time, pulls out that cattle prod killer and you've got a cop who pulls him over, you realize you're about to watch greatness. Number 4, Basic Instinct. When Sharon Stone takes the ice pick to Johnny Boz while they're having sex, you're in a movie theater, in a crowded theater in New York City, thinking to yourself, wow, we may be on to something in this movie, and it was only just beginning.
I was not expecting such steamy, scandalous, sultry material. Bravo, David Sampson. I hope Body Heat makes an appearance as well.
Prime Sharon Stone, by the way. Yikes.
Yes. Number 3.
Showgirls.
Jaws. The intensity of the opening scene when that swimmer, you realize, you know it's a bad movie about sharks and people being eaten, but you have no way of knowing what the anxiety level is going to be for the entire movie, and it starts with that opening scene. Number 2, Saving Private Ryan.
Great opening scene.
There's been a lot of war movies over the years, but the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan when they storm the beach, it's a longer scene than most, and I'm not sure I've seen a better. There is no better opening scene of a war movie, and it's the second best opening scene of any movie ever.
I will say for the Basic Instinct fans out there as well, if you want a companion piece, instead of Saving Private Ryan, you can watch Shaving Ryan's Privates. That's another film.
Oh, okay.
Ad man. And the number... and keep, the number
keep it together, boys.
That wasn't a war film, by the way. That's a different kind of movie.
The number one opening scene of all time, and this is, I assume it's number one on your list too, Adnan, is Inglourious Basterds.
Oh! Nailed it. I told him in his ear, I was like, I don't know, war movies, I feel like I have one better of an opening scene.
Wow, you didn't go with Billy, huh?
Which one?
Inglourious Basterds. That's what it was.
Yeah. Classified as a war movie.
So I don't necessarily view Inglourious Basterds as a war movie. When I'm picturing war movies, I'm thinking Platoon, Apocalypse Now.
It's more of a Chinua movie.
Movies like that. The opening scene of Inglourious Basterds, when they're in the shed, the tension that you get, he won the Oscar. That was it. It was that scene that won him the Oscar, Christopher Waitz. And I'm just thinking to myself, very few movies do you remember how you were feeling when you were watching a particular moment the first time you ever saw it. And I remember as though it were yesterday, because I couldn't forward in my mind how it was going to end. How does that scene end? So powerful. Check out Inglourious Basterds, best opening scene ever.
Adnan,
one correction, it's not Christopher Waitz, it's Christoph Waltz, but David is
sorry,
right.
Thank you.
Listen, that reveal in the basement's incredible. And I've never asked for a glass of milk since then and not thought of that movie. It's pretty incredible.
Adnan, you got 3 minutes. Go.
All right, we'll fire through this. I mean, I will mention The Social Network.
Great. That is a good scene.
Aaron Sorkin talkathon right out of the gate. You can tell this guy's a total prick. He's insulting where she's going to school. It sets the tone for the entire movie. It really is Sorkin at his best, using his verbal linguistics. Number five, David's right. I'm not going to be able to top Inglourious Basterds when it comes to Tarantino, but I'll go with Reservoir Dogs. Beginning of Tarantino's career really sets the tone for what his movies will be all about. Dialogue, funny, violent, ridiculous. Explaining what Like a Virgin's about. Dick, 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 dick. How many dicks is that? A lot. What do you mean you don't tip? I don't tip. You don't tip people at McDonald's. Number four is Trainspotting.
Great movie.
Iggy Pop, Lust for Life, pounding out of the gate. A guy running away out of a robbery. I mean, Ewan McGregor hits the ground running. Danny Boyle, awesome. Number three, Malcolm X. You've got a speech of Malcolm X. You've got the American flag being burned into an X, intercut with Rodney King's beating. If you want my attention, Spike Lee, you have it. That's about as audacious as it gets. Malcolm X at number three. Number two, an oldie but a goodie, Sunset Boulevard. The movie starts with a dead guy in a pool, and it's his voice narrating what has happened to him. In 1960, it was powerful. In 2024, it's powerful. It's a great movie. Look it up, Gloria Swanson. I am big.
I don't know how you do it, Cody.
And number one, Up.
That's amazing. That's good. That's a good one. That's a good one.
That's a good opening.
9 minutes, Roy. They tell his entire life story of 70 years. There's one shot which will break your heart. It goes from them painting the nursery. The camera pans, head downcast, miscarriage. I'm like, this is incredible. You tell an entire life story in 9 minutes. You can't top Pixar. You can't top Up at number one.
You're tripping, Adnan.
He's so right here. All you have to do is like think about that opening scene and you can get teary-eyed. That is spectacular. I couldn't agree with you more.
I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm going with Samson's List this week.
Oh, wow.
No, man.
That must hurt, Amin.
Look, man, like you have some out there takes, but today you were as close to being right as I've ever heard you be on one of these movie segments.
I mean, at least give me at least one of his five you weren't crazy about. Jaws, come on, give me one of those.
I thought, I don't remember Jaws' opening scene. That's exactly the problem. So it's not as memorable. I'm surprised, as Roy pointed out, no one had Belly when they're walking through the strip club and the black lights are on and then they start shooting everybody. I'm also surprised no one had Pulp Fiction. I love you, Honey Bunny. Cool.
Love that. Amanda Plummer.
Opening scene of Blade. How about The Dark Knight?
Oh, Dark Knight. Or the Dark
Knight was up there.
Dark Knight Rises.
Adam Sandler. Billy Madison.
Just remember, it's not how you finish. It's how you start.
Happy opening day, everybody.
All right, everybody, Mother's Day is officially around the corner. If mom's gift isn't already on the way, you've got hours, maybe even minutes, to get it together. So head over to 1-800-Flowers.com right this second. 1-800-Flowers still has great last-minute deals on handmade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts ordered easily and delivered fresh. You want to get mom something that shows your appreciation for all that she's done? We know you've been a knucklehead. She knows you've been a knucklehead. Please do better. Help your mom feel appreciated this Mother's Day. This is your last chance to lock in these Mother's Day deals. Only good while supplies last. Order today at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan, D-A-N. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
The Dan Le Batard Show with Stu Gatz is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Keeping things bottled up can feel like carrying a weight that gets heavier with time. Whether it's talking to a trusted friend, journaling, or seeking professional help, finding ways to let out your thoughts and feelings can bring relief and help you navigate challenges more effectively.
Remember, it's okay to reach out for help when you need it. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DLB today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DLB.
Don Levitard.
David Sampson, weirdo. Because he was not the fun substitute teacher who'd wheel out a TV and play a VHS tape of Armageddon in science class. He was the weird one who would eat an egg salad sandwich while clipping his toenails into the trash can and ranting about Ronald Reagan.
Stugatz.
The guy kept talking about how his ass was smooth. Smoother than a newborn's cheek. He wouldn't stop bragging about his bare buttocks to me.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
Ladies and gentlemen, this rarely happens when news breaks and the guest that we have on in the prior segment is perfect to talk about the news. So we've asked David Sampson to stick around. He's been gracious enough to give us some more time because right at the end of that segment with Adnan, the news came out. The Minnesota Timberwolves put out an official statement saying that Glenn Taylor is no longer selling the team due to the expiration of the option of Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez to acquire controlling interest in the Timberwolves and the Lynx. David, you saw this coming.
I did. So let's take people back before he was having illegal practices in Minnesota, before he bought a house and pretended he was from Minnesota. He agreed to buy the Timberwolves at a price of $1.5 billion in 2021. But it was something called a step transaction. A step transaction means you lock in the value today, but you pay over time. And there are deadlines contained within the purchase agreement that you have to make your next installment payment by a certain day. And A-Rod has missed just about every deadline. And Glenn Taylor has been okay. He said, hey, we'll extend the deadline. Don't worry about it. But meanwhile, the price of basketball teams have skyrocketed since 2021. So the Timberwolves are no longer worth 1.5. Let's say they're worth about 2.5. So that means that Glenn Taylor feels terribly that he sold the team at 1.5 when he could have sold it at 2.5. But he was in a contract, nothing he could do. Until A-Rod missed another deadline. And there were rumors that the Carlyle Group pulled out. And then 10 minutes later, A-Rod had another deal with another private equity company. And it was all horse hockey. A-Rod has never been able to come up with the money to finish this transaction. So today, Glenn Taylor said, Ganug, guess what, Alex? The team's not for sale anymore. You violated the contract. What he also said in the release is, hey, if they want to come back and talk, we can keep talking about selling the team, but guess what? An official wait to see here on Levitard Show, courtesy of Nothing Personal. If the team is sold again by Glenn Taylor to A-Rod, it won't be for 1.5.
Now, before I get into further details here, I just need to know, why are you so ecstatic about this? You are filled with glee at this point to break this down.
Because I've been calling this for 2 years. Because I negotiated with A-Rod to buy the Marlins, and he had everything except the money.
Huh.
And so it was always going to be an issue, and he wants to be an owner so badly that he pretended he wanted to be in Minnesota, but he never was able to hit a deadline. And finally, Glenn Taylor said, you know what? It's cool that you're A-Rod, but money's way more important.
What was Mark Lowry's role, if not to be the money?
Mark Lowry was brought in to be a percentage of the money, but he had given his allocation at the first go around. So he was never going to be part of the increased finishing the installments. It always had to be OPM, other people's money. And A-Rod's been out raising money for years and just has been unable to do it. And here's why. A-Rod could have borrowed money and gotten investors at the $1.5 billion number. But A-Rod always was trying to make a Beckham-like profit like Beckham did in Inter Miami. He was selling pieces of the team at numbers higher than 1.5. And people were like, hey, why do you get this incredible benefit of having such a low basis? And now it's all done.
So, David, one of the things that was part of this step transaction was, I believe that first payment that was made acquired 20% of the ownership stake. And then there were these other deadlines that was going to increase until the last one, which was end of March, was going to be the one that would have them as the majority owners of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Those prior payments that have been made, so does this just keep them as minority owners? Did they get a refund? How does that work?
No, he is a minority owner. There's two ways it can go. They can, and you have to look at the contract. So contracts can have two different provisions. One can be that if any installment payment is not made, then the entire contract is void and the money gets returned to the investor, in this case, A-Rod. It can be returned with a premium. They can maybe go to appraisal if the team is worth more since the first sale. So Glenn Taylor has to give A-Rod a little bit more for his money to get that money back. Or it can be that A-Rod stays as a limited partner with the percentage he already owned because he made those first installments. So I don't know what the contract says, but it's one of those two things.
This is one of several bizarre sales that have happened in the NBA recently. The Charlotte Hornets one, I think, is a lot more complex than people understand. I know that Gabe Plotkin, who, if that name sounds familiar from the movie Dumb Money or from the GameStop crisis, it is. It's the one and the same.
Same guy.
But it's a weird transaction where even though he's the name and he's the one buying the team, the secondary investor partner in that actually gets to be the governor for the first 5 years before it reverts over to Gabe Plotkin because he's the one that put the money up, and then Gabe Plotkin has to pay him back over the 5 years. If not, he is no longer the governor of the team. David, is it just me, or are we having more and more of these sales that seem to be more complex like that as opposed to the straightforward, hey, I want to buy your team, here's the money, let's go?
Well, listen, the number one straightforward of all time was Steve Ballmer.
Yeah. Cash.
He went to the ATM, took out a couple bill. Sterling was gone. Ballmer was in. It was a dream come true for Adam Silver. But the number of people in the world who can do transactions like that is very, very small. So when the value of the assets of these teams continues to increase, you need groups of people. Like Bruce Sherman has a group of 10 or 20 people helping him do the Marlins transaction. When you look at what David Rubenstein just did with the Orioles, they listed all of the limited partners. You're cobbling together. You're putting together 20 million pieces of 20 million each. You need a lot of money, which is why the NFL is looking into allowing sovereign fund money, and basketball and baseball already do allow it, because you want to keep the value of teams increasing. To do that, you have to find big chunks of change from people who don't want control. And in the real world, an individual doesn't want to give you $300 million toward the purchase of a team and not be allowed in the clubhouse, or not be allowed in an owner's meeting, or not be allowed to make a trade. So it's super hard to put these deals together now.
I mean, it's funny because that's the point of buying a team, right? The point of buying a team is like, I want to play fantasy basketball for real. And so the idea that people would invest the majority of the money and say, no, you go ahead and have fun with that. I just want it to be part of the financial process. It's pretty much what Mark Cuban would have us believe happened in Dallas. He sold to the Adelsons. And the idea is like, no, but I still control every element of basketball ops. I answer to no one. They just front money and do the business. It just doesn't make sense.
And I don't think that's the case. I think you have to look to see who the governor is with Cuban and the Mavericks. And I'll bet you a dollar the governor is not Mark Cuban anymore. It is the son of, I think her name was Miriam Edelson. Mm-hmm. So what's interesting, George Steinbrenner once said something to me. Play it, because it is true. But if it's true, you don't get to play it. Well, I don't even know the rules. If it's true, contextualized.
Dude, you called it on yourself. I got to hit it when you call it on yourself.
Yeah, but also, right. The rule is if you're name dropping, right? You could have said
so. This is not a name drop, because what he said was important, and for him to say it, there's nothing more limiting than being my limited partner.
That's a good,
and what that means is if you're not in the room where it happens, you're not in control, then really what you doing? You get to go to cocktail parties and say, yeah, I'm the owner of a team. That's whatever. But to really be the owner, you have to be the control person. And it's really hard to be the control person of a team.
Now, David, one of the things you mentioned, the Carlyle Group earlier, that was the original team that, the original firm that A-Rod had secured financing through. Axios had come out with a report saying that they were out because some of the stuff in their portfolio ran afoul of the NBA guidelines, bylines, whatever, right? There's another report that came out and said, no, they weren't denied. They pulled out. Either way, I don't care what the truth is. I just do want to know, for a sports league, a major league sports, like MLB, like the NBA, what would be the type of things that would be in these rules and guidelines where someone else's portfolio would run afoul of?
Well, funny, it used to be gambling. That was the big thing that they looked for, that if anyone was associated with any sort of casino or gambling, they were not eligible to be a limited partner. There is tremendous background checks that go in when you become a limited partner in baseball. There is full background, full check on who you are, who you're associated with. You've got to pass through the ownership committee, the executive council, then the full vote of the owners in Major League Baseball, to say nothing of the commissioner's office. So they're looking for any dealings. But let's be honest, Steve Cohen's background wasn't exactly perfect. He had been in the middle of some major suits, some major workplace issues, some major SEC violations. And guess what? If the price is right, Bob Barker, we're going to find a way to approve you. And so I believe that Carlyle pulled out, and it's not that the NBA turned them down, because these leagues know now that when you find chunks of change, you really need to, you need to take it. Because the commissioner, who wants his job and wants to keep his job, wants to keep the value of the teams going up. And to do that, you need lots of people with lots of money.
This interview with David Sampson is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Hey, how about that?
That's pretty good. It's a good job to try to figure out how to be a limited partner in a team. The interesting thing will be going forward with the T-Wolves, because it's such a distraction, the whole sales process. You know this, Amin, inside a locker room. And the T-Wolves have a chance to actually make a deep playoff run here in the next few months. And I wonder whether the timing of this is Glenn Taylor saying, hey, I want to see if I can win a title right now. I don't want A-Rod to get the team at that old valuation. So I'm going to announce this today and then take it from here.
Yeah, that's the other part about this. When he agreed to sell, beyond the price being a lot lower, the Timberwolves were a lot worse as a team. Now they're finally getting good. Like, hell no. I'm holding on to this for a little bit longer, see where it goes. David Sampson, again, the Nothing Personal Tour starts in Philadelphia. Tickets are available. DavidSampsonPodcast.com. And, of course, listen to Nothing Personal. Thank you, David, for sticking around.
Thank you.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Don Lebatard.
And finally, abstaining from food for 16 to 18 hours a day could be key to treating a variety of health conditions, like stabilizing blood sugar levels and increasing resistance to stress.
Stugatz.
Mike, are you doing something like this right now?
I lost a lot of weight doing intermittent fasting and low carb, so now I'm getting back to it.
But how much in that 6 to 8 hour window, how much can you eat? Unlimited?
If I could just eat unlimited, I'd do that. That'd be fun.
For 6 to 8 hours.
You can't eat unlimited.
Try me.
No, I mean...
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
This is the worst first take question ever. Is it bad for the NBA if LeBron, Steph, and KD are in the play-in? Are you
fucking insane?
Me?
Are you kidding?
It's the opposite.
It's what they want.
It's exactly what they want. Like, hey, watch these games.
Jay Williams also said earlier on First Take that high-level people in the NBA are questioning Steph Curry's leadership because of Draymond. Because
he started crying. That's why.
It's ridiculous.
He started crying, man. You start crying, people start questioning your leadership. Like, I don't want a leader that cries. I want a leader who's like, I know what to do, right? And what to do is drill this three in Jalen Suggs' mug.
And then kick the chair.
Kick the chair and tell him to go to bed. The nap time celebration is simultaneously the most wholesome and most disrespectful celebration there is, right?
That is not wholesome, man.
It's wholesome because
taking a nap.
Roy, I'm going to tell you why it's wholesome. No, I'm a parent. You're a parent. A lot of us here are parents. Like, you wouldn't feel bad about your child seeing, like, what's that about? Like Sam Cassell doing this? Like, what's this, daddy? Like, nothing. Don't worry about it.
Well.
Yeah, right? But, like, what's that? Oh, it's like he's putting on the bed. Oh, it's bedtime. Like, oh, that's cool.
So explaining it to your children is why it's wholesome.
That's what makes it wholesome. If you could show it to your kids and not have to have an awkward explanation, it's wholesome. Now, it's disrespectful because he's calling them babies. He said, get these babies off me. This baby trying to guard me. You know, Jalen Suggs is a good defensive player. Jalen Suggs fancies himself as a lockdown defensive player, and I think he is. But he ain't locking down no Steph Curry, though.
What about LeBron's thing? Is that disrespectful?
Push down and then the three on?
Yeah. It's elaborate.
Because it's all about me.
Not disrespectful. Like, it is elaborate.
That's
though.
The difference. Is Steph is just going to sleep, where LeBron's pumping himself up.
No.
Just go to bed.
But no, it's not go to bed. It's like it's bedtime,
right.
Bitch. Like that's why it's
perfect, because it's veiled as wholesome, it's actually disrespectful. That's actually kind of Steph Curry's whole thing.
I have an idea for a new disrespectful celebration that is still kind of wholesome. Maybe not so wholesome now that I think about it, but I'll say it anyway. This is what I want. I don't care what any player in the NBA, you can take this one, but you got to be a killer out here. You can't be someone who just does it once and then goes back to your normal life as a role player. I need someone who's taking hearts. I need a dog. I need someone who's taking hearts like Steph Curry took that heart last night. You hit the shot, you come back down the court, and then you mime, taking off your belt, folding it up, and then whap, whap, whap.
Shot abuse?
And then
are you kidding?
And then you grab
the snap is a good
I remember like Robin Harris in House Party.
Yep.
And this then, started as a wholesome celebration.
And then you put the belt back on and you walk to the bench.
I like it.
I think it's dope, man. I think that because it lets everybody know
who's daddy.
Exactly.
Is that wholesome?
I'm your father. It's wholesome in another era.
My favorite one is James Harden, because he's not talking. He's just like, his is like, cook it, right?
Yeah, no, he's like, I'm cooking. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's like, he's just talking about himself. I'm cooking right now. I'm not disrespecting anyone.
Dame Time
is perfect, right?
Dame Time is another
That's
like,
the best.
It's wholesome and disrespectful. Because it's like,
but that's about him. He's not talking about anyone else there.
No.
That's right. Dame Time.
No,
it's me.
No. What he's telling is like, it's about that time, right? But the problem
for
is
me.
The problem, no.
Yeah, but for me to end you.
For me to end you. Because here's the thing. Here's the reason why Curry's is more disrespectful than Dame's. Because I can be at a restaurant, a club, a bar, a party, and say, all right, guys, it's time to go. We're closing. It's time to go. And that's not disrespectful, because these are adults. I'm an adult. But when you say, it's bedtime, I'm talking to a little kid. I'm talking to a
I'm
baby.
Putting you to sleep.
Yeah, but I tuck in a little kid. Hey, come here.
Yes.
Come here. Just lay down.
Right.
But I'm talking to adults, Chris.
You guys ever cocoon? I do that for my daughter.
Well, when you're doing that to the Orlando Magic, who are a young team, like Jalen Suggs, who's a young defender, who's probably going to be all NBA as a defensive player this year.
He's had a great year.
He's had an unbelievable year defensively, and then you do that.
Yeah.
Just good night.
The one he hit against Dylan Brooks early this year might be my favorite time he's ever done that. Even better than the one in the finals. The one in the finals is pretty cold because
really good.
I'm gonna tell you why the one in the I take that back. Now I think
I was gonna say the stakes were really high.
It's not just the stakes, Tony. It's because you realize, oh, he's not just talking about this game. He's saying this series is bedtime. Your season, your existence, Boston. It's a wrap, right? That's what made it super special. You know, this Rockets one. Like you guys still have another game tomorrow or whatever. But it still was so, because he was laughing. He laughed at Dylan Brooks and then put him to bed. Like,
I mean, it's just like Damian Lillard going bye-bye.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
That was so good. Did Jordan have one of these? Or was his the shrug?
But the shrug wasn't a consistent one. It was a singular moment in time.
Mid-game.
Jordan was almost, I mean,
the fist.
It's a fist pump. Yeah, it's almost like Tiger Woods.
Not almost like Tiger Woods.
Yeah,
Tiger
the same
Woods,
thing.
Tiger Woods ripped it off of Michael Jordan.
Right.
Kobe, the same thing.
Giannis flexes. That seems to be Giannis's
Jimmy
move.
Just falls down and lays down and puts his hands behind his head. He just lays on the floor like, I've been working too hard.
Melo with the three.
That's
hitting a three, though. That's a different story.
We're looking for like the ender. Like, this is like the finishing move in Mortal Kombat.
Dikembe Mutombo.
That's a finger block, wag. Yeah,
this is a block for a block.
That's disrespectful. That is like
it's actually pretty polite.
Yeah, it's like no.
Wholesome.
Not in the house of Mutombo.
No, yeah, not in the house of Mutombo.
It's like Babu Bot.
Yeah, no.
Iverson didn't really have one.
Iverson did. Oh, the cupping of the ear was Iverson.
Him stepping over Tyronn Lue.
But that was a singular.
No, that's. I know. I'm not saying that was his thing.
No, but the cupping of the ear, that was like that, which was a wrestling thing. Iverson was the first one to be in the NBA to like run across and listen to the crowd. Like, yo, I'll never forget the intro scene for NBA 2K2, right? Like, it was because he was on the cover and it was like all these different highlights. And then the last thing was him cupping and the crowd going, MVP, MVP. It's like, oh, I got goosebumps right now thinking about it. Boy, 2K used to have some great intros, man.
I don't like Trae Young's. Just like, Ice. I'm cold. Like, he's acting like he's cold.
Yeah.
Wait, get on the table.
The best was he hit what he thought was a game winner.
We've got the 2K2 intro. 2K. Oh, my God. Yeah, look at that. Oh God.
Oh, that crossover.
Oh,
crossover.
My God. Sean Marion with Matrix. The little windmill. David Simon throw the alley-oop. She'd come down. Oh, that was Ray Allen, a game winner. Or a game-tying dunk. Stephon Marbury with the alley-oop. Oh, man.
Russell Westbrook kind of has like a rock the baby type thing.
Yes, that's a good one. It's kind of derivative, though.
Dirk dunk.
Yeah, Dirk dunk from Steve Nash. Reggie Miller, tough buzzer beater right there. Oh,
for the is that Bonzi?
Audio audience, you guys are missing out on some great.
Just go look up the NBA 2K2 intro because this is spectacular.
Oh, Nash with the behind the back pass. This was a great editing.
I was just going to say the graphics and the editing could not look more like the early 2000s.
But it's so cool.
But it's awesome.
Oh, but does it not have the MVP at the end?
Oh, is that Sega?
Oh, maybe I messed up. Maybe it was a different one.
Sega. Wow.
Hoops back in the day was fire.
Oh, okay.
Let's be honest.
What's up?
That Hoops back in the day was fire. You know, look at those names and you're like, wow.
I'm going to tell you right now, Tony.
It's going to be the same when we look back at it in 20 years.
Yes,
though.
First of all, like 20 years from now, we're going to be talking about like, you know, I don't know, Trae Young Jr. We're like, oh, he's nothing as good as his dad.
As good as
his
dad. Trae Young Jr.
Yeah, it's going to be something ridiculous like that.
So is your dad.
Right? What? Why would your dad? But the other thing about it, Tony, I'm going to tell you, like when you watch that, even when you watch anything from like the early 2000s or whatever, we're only remembering the good parts. We're not remembering the wrestling matches. We're not remembering like the slow.
Like 87-73.
Oh, man. At the end of regulation. And we're going to overtime, right? Like it just, it's one of those things where we have like a nostalgia, but we don't, the nostalgia almost erases the reality of the day to day. Right.
It covers the sins of what the era was. But when you look at those teams, right? You look at the Spurs, you look at the Lakers, you look at the Mavericks, like all those teams I remember watching so vividly and it felt like there were so many stars across the league that now it feels like just there's kind of pockets.
Really? I feel like now back in the day there were so many bad teams or teams that like legitimately, all right, you're not bad, but you have no shot at this. And I look now across the NBA and, you know.
Are you going to play shot or no shot? They have a shot or not?
Oh, shot or no shot.
That's pretty good. Also, thinking about that era, like I my favorite series that I watched as a kid was the 2005, and they didn't even win it. The Heat didn't win, but the 2005 Eastern Conference Finals between the Pistons and the Heat that won seven games. Game seven, Detroit Pistons won 88-82.
Come on.
It was ugly.
Ugly basketball.
It was rock fights.
And you look back and you look at that team as one of the best. You look at, I mean, Rasheed Wallace was playing offense for them. You had Shaq and Dwayne Wade, and yet, I mean, truly dreadful scores.
Oh, man. But
Pat Riley basketball right there.
But, to my point, Tony, like when you go look at, all right, Boston has Tatum and Brown. The Bucks have Giannis and Dame. The Knicks have Jalen Brunson. All right. The Cavs have Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland and maybe Evan Mobley soon, right? Orlando.
Banchero.
Right? Pacers. Halliburton. and Siakam. Miami, Jimmy and Bam. Philly, Embiid and Maxey, right? And now I'm eight deep in the conference, and if I go over to the West, Jokic, you've got Anthony Edwards.
But if you're thinking back in this time you're talking about, those bad teams had a good player or
two. No, they didn't, man. No, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna go back to what?
Go back. Let's go back in the way
back
machine.
What year do we want? What year do we want?
Give me a season. Just name a season. A random season.
Let's do 03. Let's do 04.
03, 04?
Yeah.
Okay, 03, 04. Pulling it up right here.
So 03, 04 is the first year of LeBron, Melo, and Wade.
Right. Go to like the worst team in the league.
The worst team in the league was the Orlando Magic. They didn't have anybody.
I mean, who do they
look at that roster?
The Pistons have Cade Cunningham, so he's still.
That's not.
They have like Hedo Turkoglu or something. Who'd they have?
No, I think Hedo was with the Kings at that time.
Yeah, Hedo was still with the Kings.
Young Hedo.
Orlando in 2003, right? That's what we're asking.
Jameer Nelson.
03, 04. Jameer Nelson was never a star. He was a good player. He was an All Star. But he wasn't a star.
No, you're right. No, like that's if he's their best player, that's a bad.
Okay, here we go. Their best players were. Oh, well,
wait a second. Okay, hold on. Keep going.
See? Exactly.
Who was it?
I forgot they had my guy, Mac.
Looks like Tracy. I was right.
Oh, no. The Clippers.
Second worst team.
Lamar Odom, I think, was on that team.
See, dude, every team had good players.
No, Lamar Odom wasn't, but like that. See, that's different.
But then you're going to get to the guy. Come on.
Oh, wait.
He was their number two. Come on. It was.
Wasn't Katino Mobley on that team?
But he's not a star.
Elton Brand early.
On that Clippers, no, not in 03.
Oh, yeah, Elton Brand was there.
Sure.
Oh, it's Elton Brand. Okay, but Elton Brand was there. But Elton Brand was like that's like a sturdy player.
Chris Kaman,
the Candyman.
Corey Maggette.
Oh, Corey Maggette was nice. Come on, what are we doing? Corey Maggette was nice.
I mean,
ooh, Keon Dueling.
These guys are fun, but they weren't stars, man. It's not like Halliburton and you know the guys that we're saying are gonna carry the.
I could do this all day just reading
Chicago. How about Chicago?
We're running out of time here, man.
They had
who'd they have? Give me
Jamal
one name.
Crawford.
Come on. Young Jay crossover?
I love this game.
All right, everybody. Mother's Day is officially around the corner. If mom's gift isn't already on the way, you've got hours, maybe even minutes to get it together. So head over to 1-800-Flowers.com right this second. 1-800-Flowers still has great last-minute deals on handmade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts ordered easily and delivered fresh. You want to get mom something that shows your appreciation for all that she's done? We know you've been a knucklehead. She knows you've been a knucklehead. Please do better. Help your mom feel appreciated this Mother's Day. This is your last chance to lock in these Mother's Day deals. Only good while supplies last. Order today at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan, D-A-N. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.